Hello and welcome to the Baseball Wisconsin podcast. I'm your host, Tim Gotzler. All right, so I had to sneak an extra innings episode in there, and I really think you're going to like this one. Today's episode, we're going to sit down with Brooks Braga from BRX Performance in the Milwaukee area. Now, I'm releasing this episode just, you know, end of the first week. A lot of you have already done the tryout process, the team selection process, and, you know, what you learn over the years is, you know, you have some schools that have over 100 kids coming to tryouts. You have some schools that have, what seems like 15 kids coming to tryouts. So there's decision-making processes. It's a really tough time for kids, a tough time for coaches and families. And, you know, there's always the highs and the lows of who makes what team and everything else. But anyways, eventually, right, season start, the first games are on the horizon, it's spring break, it's conference schedules, you know. But what Brooks does in this episode gives us an insight into his world. And if you've been following BRX Performance at all on social media, or again, if you have any athletes who have visited, they just, to me, they seem like they're the right company at the right time in baseball in Wisconsin. And like everything else, you know, we're pretty late to the party in, you know, Northern baseball, but that strength conditioning piece is so vital. And you're seeing it just take off all over, not just our state, but the country, right? If you turn on any college baseball game, you go to high school games now, and they just seem bigger, faster, and stronger. There's the training's different. It's baseball specific, and that's where Brooks and his team and Josh and that whole BRX team have done a great job working with athletes. You know, they talk about some of the offerings that they have and the in-person, the remote, you know, but this isn't a salesy episode. It's not, you know, trying to get sign-ups or trying to get business. I mean, Brooks is truly just giving out information for free. And yeah, I don't know about you, but, you know, I think I know this, I think I know that, I can tap into a couple resources, but when I get a chance to talk to leaders of their industry, I'm going to find a way to try to mine some information. So that's what today's episode is. It's looking at the holistic approach to strength conditioning, to arm care, to warm up, cool down, in season, you know, all those things. So I really enjoyed this episode. I know I listened to it a few times myself before I published it. But yeah, just super excited to get it to listeners. So without further ado, Brooks Braga. Hey, Brooks, how you doing today?
Fantastic. How are you, Tim?
Outstanding. Thanks. Hey, before the listeners, why don't you just get us started? Like, where'd you grow up? Talk us through your playing career, your life in baseball, then, you know, on your path into what you're doing now.
Yeah, would love to. So I'm from the west side of Madison, went to Middleton High School. Played football, baseball, and basketball. So the few, the proud, the three sport athletes, they don't make them too much anymore. But yeah, I had a great high school experience and actually was planning on playing football primarily and baseball, lacrosse, which is where I went to college. But when I was a senior in high school, I'm not sure if you remember this, but they actually, amidst all the budget cuts, this was 2009, the spring, we had just finished a playoff game for high school. And my assistant coach is kind of a jokester, came up to me after we like finished the game and said, "Did you hear lacrosse just cut baseball, Brooks?" And I was like, and he was kind of a jokester. So I'm like, no way, you're not serious. But no, they actually did cut it. And so I actually went to lacrosse thinking I was just going to play football. And they ended up scraping enough funds to keep the team around for a year. And then there was an anonymous donor that stepped up after my freshman year at lacrosse that basically kept the program around. And so my freshman year was kind of cool. The time I was there, we were, think like, you know, 15 and 25, all freshmen and sophomores got, you know, our noses rubbed in dirt quite a bit. But then 2 years later, my junior year, we actually had the best record in WIAC history at the time, was 21-2. So we won the conference title that year, just had a great experience, ended up just playing baseball instead of football at lacrosse, the way it shook out, and definitely wouldn't have traded it for the world. And that was definitely obviously a big, big part of my athletic experience. And it was a great time.
Hold up, I gotta go back to that time for a second.
Yeah, for sure.
Obviously, outsider looking in, and you're in it, and the coaching staff, the athletic department, the families. Just thinking about that moment and that year, and now what lacrosse baseball has been since then. I mean,
pretty incredible.
Like, what goes through your mind when you think about those last now 15 years?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, Coach Schwartz, who I know you had on the podcast, you know, did a great job just keeping everything together. And it's been really cool, you know, just thinking back to my freshman year, you know, now, you know, the whole team's wearing the same, you know, have the same practice attire. It's just an organized, like, you know, an organized operation. And my freshman year, it was just like, hey, we're just here to play ball. And it was none of that. And we obviously still wanted to win, but just to see the transformation of the program. And it wasn't like, you know, the players for those 4 years had all of it. It was Coach Schwarz. It was the team. It was the community. Cause we wouldn't have been able to stick around had, you know, that donor who I don't think has ever been named to this day step forward. So, and then to see what they've done, I think it was the year after or 2 years after I graduated, they went to the World Series, made that run. And since, it's just been one of the top programs in the WIAC. And so just being part of that transition was something I always cherish. And it's just so cool to see what they've done.
Well, thanks for going into that. I had to interject there, but let's get back to,
yeah.
So you're playing at lacrosse, you know, you're going through college, you're playing ball. And then what's next?
Yeah. So Schwarzy can probably attest to the fact that I was like that guy doing all the weird stuff that he found on YouTube, like after practice with respect to weight room stuff. And, you know, I was, we had our program, and it was great, but, you know, I was always just kind of that guy who's like, there's gotta be something more out there. And that led me to, you know, the, going to the depths of YouTube and stumbled across Eric Cressy, who was kind of, and still is really kind of the go-to like baseball strength guy. Right. And, So with my kinesiology, they call it exercise science at lacrosse, with that program, they basically require you to complete an internship in order to graduate. And so, you know, I could have done something nearby at the UWL Sports Performance Center and took the easy route, but I was like, I would just really love to be out there in Boston, Hudson, Massachusetts, technically, but just to go out there and experience something new. So I applied. And I was really lucky. I was fortunate enough to get one of the internship spots. I think there was like over 100 applicants and I was one of the five. And it was a really cool time to be out there as well for my internship, which was January through April 2014, because, you know, they at that point had like 100 professional baseball players training there every offseason. And this is like the prime offseason time from January through, you know, the beginning of March at least. So that was a great experience that really opened my eyes, and just, you learn so many things out there, just getting your hands dirty that you just can't learn in the classroom. And so was able to obviously transition that experience at lacrosse into that incredible first work experience at Cressy Performance. And that's what kind of led me to coming back to Wisconsin.
Well, and you know, those that follow Cressy now, right? Like multiple sites with the Yankees, like, you know, that whole industry seems to have just taken off. You know, and you and I, you know, roughly the same age and can remember the days of what weight training was, and the guys even older than us, you know, it was like almost a frowned upon thing at times in the baseball industry. And now, like, seeing where it is, if it's other facilities or at the college or professional level, you got to just smile sometimes looking at the industry.
Yeah.
And you know, you come back, you now have this itch, this, you know, and you start thinking, okay, as a profession, how can I use this passion that I have? So talk us through the early days of BRX and, you know, what really launches you to take that huge leap into entrepreneurship.
Yeah. So it's an interesting story. So I actually was offered a job at Cressy Performance after my internship, but I just really, you know, it was the lowest man on the totem pole. You're kind of being handed a program. Hey, go do this with the athletes. And I just like really, you know, not in my DNA. I didn't know that I was going to be an entrepreneur, but looking back on it, I think that was kind of that, like, wanting to be, do my own thing was kind of coming out at that point. And so I was offered a job, a private strength training facility that was in the same building as Styx Academy back when they were at the Olympia Resort in Oconomowoc. And I was going to be the only trainer there, like, you know, a little 2000 square foot small studio, you know, you just can't like move without rubbing someone else's shoulders. And it was just calling to me. And obviously coming back to Wisconsin was a pro as well. So I was there for, I want to say, just under a year and had developed a really good relationship with Sean Smith, the owner of Styx Academy at that point. And I was kind of looking to maybe make a move, and I was actually offered a job with Prospect Training Academy to be their like lead strength coach. And I was, you know, things weren't working out with that facility. And I actually told Sean at Styx that, hey, I'm going to be moving on to PTA. And I'll never forget this. He walked into my office and said, what do I have to do to keep you here? Which I'm always incredibly grateful for looking back on it. And this will be kind of a theme we talk about. I've had some incredible people that have really helped us get to where we are. Sean was one of them. And so that, you know, one thing led to another, and I didn't want to do it on my own because I'm just the trainer at this point, right? I had no clue how to read a P&L or anything like that. And Sean basically said, well, what if we help you get your feet off the ground? And would you consider opening up your own business? And so I turned to one of my college teammates, Josh Rolls, who is the business director. He's the CEO of BRX Performance, had, you know, a business management degree at La Crosse, and said, hey, do you want to do this? And he said, I'm in. And Sean and RJ at Hitters were kind enough to work with us with our first year, in addition to our individual training we were doing at the time. But yeah, they were very instrumental helping us get our feet off the ground. So we basically made or incorporated BRX, I think it was September 2015, and got things rolling that way in that same Olympia resort adjacent to Styx. We grew really quickly, had to move into a bigger unit inside of that same building that same year. Then within a year of that, we had grown to a size where it was like, hey, we, you know, we can't even fit in 6,000 square feet anymore. And that's what led us to our current location, which is right off 94 near the state fairgrounds. So we've been here since 2015. And yeah, I mean, even beyond that, like people like yourself, I remember our first couple of years, people like yourself, Coach Johnson at Greendale, Scott Howler at Oak Creek, Sal Bando at Marquette, the Doberstein brothers with Pewaukee all let us come speak to their teams at player parent meetings. And, you know, I'm definitely a believer in the idea, you know, luck is where preparation meets opportunity. But, you know, I've really, really mean this. I've been very fortunate to have some incredible people help us out along the way, you being one of them. And that's what kind of brought us to this point.
All right. So I gotta go back in time a little bit here. I mean, I think like the facilities and the names you just mentioned, like, 10 years ago were pretty on the fringes of amateur baseball, and not in a negative way, but like if you talk about PTA or GRB Styx or Hitters or like these, now you can't talk about youth baseball in the Milwaukee area without any people not knowing what you're talking about, right? Yeah. Or BRX, obviously, I'll obviously put in that category too, because just things have changed so much, obviously within your business and your world, but also just across the industry, you know. And I was born and raised in this area, and I watched the evolution happen. You know, a lot of it was the summer ball to spring ball, the explosion of the academies and all this specific training. And then to see the fruits of that labor, like just develop over time and all the success stories. And I know you have some just great stories to think about your early days, and you know, that you and Josh just fresh, you know, green, starting this business, working, you know, 200 hours a week, what felt like. And so maybe take us back to those days. What's some lessons that you learned, you know, some success stories along the way, and as you made your mark in this area and across the state and across the country?
Yeah, man, so many lessons, so many just things rushing into my head all at the same time. I think the number one thing has just been being a relationship oriented company with respect to relationships between our staff members, you know, internally, relationships from, you know, us with opinion leaders in the area, like yourself, the other coaches that I mentioned, you know, and, you know, just as importantly, just doing whatever we can to meet the needs of our athletes and families. And, you know, not to toot our own horn, but we have a nice Google review ranking. And I'd like to think that's because, you know, we've really, really tried to not operate like a get you in, get you out factory, but really, really make it an individualized, personalized experience. And that is everything from the drills on your program based on your assessment to how we treat you when you walk in the door. And so, you know, there's just so many, too many to list, honestly, but just relationships is what sticks out the most to me.
All right. So you start building this thing, you become, you know, a staple in the baseball community. You know, and now, you know, we talked a little bit off air, but, you know, your social media presence, you've done so many things. Like, walk us through this right now. We walk in the building, we reach out to you. Like, what services does BRX Performance provide?
Yeah, so our bread and butter, our number one thing has always been individualized baseball-specific strength training, right? And everyone argues about what baseball-specific means, but at the end of the day, you know, and I should back up for a second and mention that we don't just train baseball players. We actually have pretty much every sport represented at BRX, but it just so happens that, you know, 80% of the people who reach out or walk into BRX happen to be baseball. And that's partially because of how we kind of, you know, got our start in the industry. But our number one thing is individualized strength training. And, you know, not every athlete is limited by their strength, but generally speaking, for the typical high school baseball player, how strong you are is a much bigger limiter of your current abilities than perfect mechanics or if I'm getting enough exposure. Now, there's a time and a place for all of those things, and we help athletes with all of that. But we actually have a customer avatar. We call him Baseball Billy, and this is like our typical athlete. He's a 5'11", 140-pound high school freshman or sophomore. You know, he's like I said, 140 pounds dripping wet. He's playing on a travel team. He doesn't eat breakfast. He trains once every 2 weeks in the weight room. He just needs to get a little bit stronger. And so we really built our business on meeting that need first and foremost. But with that said, you know, sometimes you help athletes with one problem and then they have future problems that happen after that, right? So great, I'm strong enough now, but now I feel like I should be throwing harder than I am. I'm strong enough to, but it's just not materializing and coming together on the mound. And so slowly but surely over the last decade, I can't believe I'm saying decade, but since we've opened, you know, we've started to add more of a throwing emphasis as well. So our two services for in-gym athletes are strength training and throwing, a throwing program. You do have to be, every athlete has to be strength training with us, and then throwing is an optional add-on. So about 120, when I looked this morning, I think 120 of our 240 actively training athletes also throw with us. It's not mandated, but that's kind of our two primary like in-gym brick and mortar services. And we also have some online stuff, which we may or may not get into, but that's kind of our current battery of services: in-gym strength, in-gym throwing, and online remote training that kind of mirrors the in-gym experience.
All right. Well, great segue. Talked about your remote training. I know, you know, the timing of all of this is just so unique, but you know, you were offering services in 2019, you're building the platform, the app, so many things. And then COVID hits, you know, becomes a much more attractive option for a variety of reasons. Fast forward a few years, here we are now. Maybe talk us through your online services as well.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, we're talking about before we kind of officially started the call, you know, COVID, obviously terrible thing for humanity. Strictly from a business perspective, it was really an important moment for us at BRX because, you know, it was like, hey, we got to start thinking beyond the four walls of our gym. I mean, there are places like in Canada where they were closed for 16 months. I mean, we were on the lucky end being closed for 3 months, which felt like an eternity. But it really kind of opened our eyes to, man, we got to really diversify and can't put all of our eggs in one basket. So we started really kind of putting the pedal to the metal with the online side of our business. We have two options for remote training. There is what we call like our premium service, which is meant to work in parallel with the in-gym experience as much as possible. So online assessment, individualized online program, a coach who's checking in with you to make sure you're actually doing your stuff. So that is the premium side of our online business. On the other side, we have we call it our BDS system, which is kind of like a do-it-yourself program, more cost-effective. And this is for athletes who are maybe just, hey, I just want like a little bit of structure. I have a gym I train at. I don't feel like I need a coach to help me implement it. Just give me some drills to do. And so that's the second option, is a do-it-yourself branch of our online business.
All right. So that's super helpful. You know, just as listeners, and, you know, we have a variety of different people listening to us, mostly high school coaches, but, you know, players, academy, you know, variety of people. It just gets me thinking about this time of year, right? We're recording this on March 8th, 2024. The pitchers and catchers report on the high school side here in a couple days. You know, we laugh like, you know, your business, your schedule starts to slow down a bit. Ours starts to crank up, you know. But, you know, this past winter, you have a gym full of kids every night from all ages, not just high school. Like, what's the lowest hanging fruit right now that you're seeing in that avatar, you know, that 5'11 kid that didn't eat breakfast? Like, maybe you alluded to some of it. What's that lowest hanging fruit right now that athletes could get into right away?
Yeah, I'm obviously really biased based on what I said earlier. I think, you know, and again, every kid is different, hence the importance of an individualized approach, because we'll have a kid who's 6'2", 220 pounds, been lifting with the football team for 4 years. You know, like, maybe the strength isn't his lowest hanging fruit. Maybe it is getting more refined on the mound with his mechanics and having someone work with him closely on that. That definitely happens. But if the question is more about, you know, for the typical athlete that applies to the greatest number of people, this may seem a little counterintuitive, but for most kids, if their goal is to one day be a starter on varsity or to one day play in college, in my opinion, they should be treating almost every month of the year as their off season with respect to their strength training. Now, that doesn't mean that they should be going and squatting 300 pounds a day before they go out and pitch. It just means, hey, don't completely take your foot off the gas when it comes to the weight room for 3 to 6 months for your spring and summer season, right? If you currently throw 70 miles an hour as a freshman and you know that you should probably be throwing around 80 to maybe get on varsity next year or get on college radars, like that's not going to happen just based on sitting around and just playing games. Like you got to change something with your body. And so to summarize, you know, I think that the one thing that a lot of kids, the typical high school athlete, should think about is how can I be strength training during my season in a way that allows me to make physical gains without crushing myself. So that way I can, you know, achieve my long-term goals, but at the same time, not sacrificing my, you know, in-season performance.
Perfect. All right. Here's a segue. I've never done this before, but you're the perfect guy to do it. We're going to go a little bit of role playing here, right? I am, I'm a high school coach who listens to this and thinks, you know what, Brooks, that sounds great. You got 250 athletes and a degree from, you know, all these degrees, all these fancy things. I'm just a social studies teacher at Menominee Falls. Yeah, I got a track team. I got softball. You know, you don't know what it's like to be a high school coach. How am I supposed to weight train and strength train with my guys for the next 3 months? What's your answer?
That's a great question. And let me throw it back at you for a second. If we're role playing, what are the limitations we're working with? What are the constraints? Do you have access to a high school gym? If so, what time periods? How does this work in conjunction based on the times you have for indoor, you know, indoor availability for your cage work and your practices?
Well, the limitations that come to mind, right? I'm thinking about it's going to take away from my me swinging a fungo or throwing BP or putting in my first and thirds. So, you know, I don't want it to take time away from my program. And then sometimes we're inside, sometimes we're outside, sometimes we're right after school, sometimes we are late at night. It's an ever-changing schedule. So it's hard to be consistent when I just don't know what I'm going to get every day. So what would you recommend? Let's just say we're inside that day and we can lift after practice. Give me like the right amount of time. Are there some staple lifts and some things we should be doing? And how do we get there?
Absolutely. So I think this is where there's maybe like an ideal scenario, but you know, what's the military term? No plan survives the first contact with the enemy, right? So having to have a safety net in place. And this is where I think, okay, we find some sort of combination of, hey, in a perfect world, schedule doesn't change. And we have 3 days a week, maybe two, let's say 2 to 3 days a week where, and by the way, practice first, strength training second. That's always the best way to do it. You don't want to fatigue yourself before you get into fine motor skill movement, right? So that's like the first takeaway is try your best, if possible, strength training after practice. Now, if it's strength training before practice or nothing at all, then I think you got to find a way to get into the gym beforehand. So now it comes down to, you know, school schedules. Is the weight room open? Is it either right before practice or right after practice? Is it open? There's a lot of nuances here, right? But I think in a perfect world, we find a way as a team to get 2 workouts per weekend after practice. Maybe the next tier down from there is, okay, if we got to do it before, we'll make it happen. Tier 3 is, hey, maybe I just have a plan that I can give my players. If I can't make it happen before or after practice when I'm there with them, guys, this isn't mandatory, but I strongly encourage you guys to be using a program. And for most kids, any program is a good first step. Don't overthink it. Strongly encouraging your athletes to be training during the season outside of your, you know, team time is kind of that, you know, that safety net fallback option.
All right. So let's live in a tier 1 world, right? We'd love to live in an optimal tier 1 world. After practice, like, is there some kids will go to the gym for an hour and a half. They'll do 30 minutes of actual work. You know, the rest of the time they're scrolling their phones. You know, we don't have that kind of time, right? It's a high school program. So like, is there an optimal amount of time I should carve out of my day post-practice where you think we can get a good return on our time of investment with good intentional work?
Absolutely. And let's be honest, there's a lot of stressors in a kid's life during their season, right? Hey, you should be strength training when they're getting up at 7 a.m. They're probably not going to bed till 1 a.m. because they're scrolling TikTok. You know, they're going through their exams. They got all day at school. Then they have practice. When I was this age, the last thing I wanted to do was go train, right? We're keenly aware of that, right? But honestly, like, something is better than nothing. And I'm a big believer that if structured right, and I shouldn't even say if structured right, but if kids are getting in the gym for 30 minutes, if you can carve out 30 minutes after high school baseball practice, and you have some sort of plan, any sort of plan, that can do wonders with respect to helping the kids who are maybe strong enough, stay strong enough, and the kids who, you know, are 130 pounds dripping wet, take some baby steps in season. So it's not a, we only have 6 months out of the year to develop sort of deal. So to answer your question, you know, succinctly, 30 minutes after practice, you know, get in 6 exercises, 3 supersets of 2 exercises. Don't overthink it. Get them training, make it quick, get them in, get them out, and that'll do wonders.
Brooks, I don't understand what a superset is. What are you talking about? I go on my elliptical when my wife gets pissed at me for losing some weight. So what is a superset? What are you talking about? Give me something more than that.
I absolutely figured that was going to be the next question as soon as it left my mouth. So superset, think of this as 2 exercises you do together in alternating fashion. So for example, one of our favorite supersets is a trap bar deadlift and a one-arm band Y exercise, right? So I might do in season 3 sets of 2 or 3 reps on a trap bar deadlift. We call that A1. A2 would be your kneeling one-arm Y. I might do 2 sets of 8 reps per arm with that Y exercise with a band. And the superset, we just call them like A's. You can call them whatever you want. But basically A1, A2, I see the same letter there. That means it's a superset. I'm going to alternate, go back and forth between those 2 exercises. That way, when I'm limited to 30 minutes in the gym, I don't have to wait and rest for 3 minutes after every single set. I can pair exercises together that allow me to train one muscle group, so my deadlifts, my back, my legs. And then when I'm doing my A2 exercise, my one arm Y, I'm training my shoulder, my rotator cuff, right? And my traps and my back. I can let the muscles I just worked on my trap bar deadlift rest while I'm doing my Ys in a way that allows me to just constantly be getting work in.
That's really helpful. Appreciate that. I'm going to give you another scenario, right? Weather, knock on wood, in Southeast Wisconsin is looking good. We might be able to get on our field sooner than we've ever have. But you know, we're not Campbell baseball. We're not rolling in with a trailer of weights in a portable weight room. So we're out at the field. You know, when we're on campus at the gym, we have access to all, you know, trap bar deadlifts and dumbbells and kettlebells and squat racks, the whole deal. But when we're out at our field, you know, we still want to get some work in after practice. Is there some supplies that we could invest in? Is there some body weight things that we can do so we can still get, you know, those 2 to 3 strength conditioning sessions in per week, even if we're off site?
Absolutely. And this obviously can get into a more nuanced discussion as well. Like, what kind of equipment do you think that a typical coach might be able to bring as far as like how heavy could it be? Let's just make the assumption that we don't have any weights whatsoever, right? I think the number one thing a coach could invest in is, you know, some simple like resistance bands, right? That would be number one. There are bands, you know, the typical Jaeger bands, or they're called Spree Zertu bands. If you just type in resistance bands with handles on Amazon, you'll know what I'm talking about. Then there's also something called super bands, which are, there's different names for these, but if you go to performbetter.com and type in super bands, you'll see what I'm talking about. They're a little bit thicker. There's no handles. And these can be used for a variety of exercises as well. These are really cheap. These bands are between $15 and $25. Get, you know, 4 or 5 bands of varying resistances, and that'll allow you to, you know, get something in. And honestly, as we talk about this time, I think one thing that might be cool is for BRX to create like a on-field, like, you know, resistance band only strength training routine. I'd be happy to send that to you. And maybe when the conversation comes about, you can pass it off to coaches that you come in contact with. But honestly, so we can kind of get into the weeds there, but probably beyond the scope of this conversation as far as what a program might actually look like. But I think the number one thing that coaches can do at the field without having a lot of equipment would be sprinting. And so this maybe gets into something we're going to talk about a little bit later, as far as maybe we're going to talk about follow poles versus sprints, stuff like that. What's the right way to condition? after practice, after games, if you can get, you know, 2 to 3 times a week sprint sessions in, pretty simple, 40 to 60 yards, 6 to 10 sprints, that'll go a long way for helping athletes maintain lower body strength and explosiveness, which are two of the big heavy hitters in season.
All right. That's beautiful. Thank you, man. I really appreciate that. And I know it's giving you a hard time here going into
a little bit of
character, but you know, this is the things that you hear, right? Those in the industry that are, you know, quote, scared of the weight room. They don't know what to do. They're following 1,000 different guys on Twitter and they don't know which one to follow. And, you know, so I'd like to just try to package this in a scenario of any different size program. Maybe talk to us about like the injury prevention side of this too. Just since we're going to stay here a little bit, like, you know, there's the maintain strength, there's the gaining strength, you know, the mobility, flexibility, all the things. But like, is there an injury prevention portion of this that maybe goes, you know, untalked about?
Yeah. So what's interesting is that, you know, I think the prevailing wisdom over the last several decades has been, hey, really, let's try our best to not get any overuse injuries. Let's really limit, you know, pitch counts, throwing volume. And one of the most interesting developments of the last 5 to 10 years with respect to research has been, it's less about the volume in season and more about the way that we prepared before the season. Now, obviously it's March 8th, season starts in a week. So it's not like we have 2 months to talk about how you can prepare 2 months before your season starts. But there's actually interesting graphs that show like the number of Tommy John surgeries by month in Major League Baseball players. I think this is a great way to illustrate a broader concept, right? And the numbers of UCL tears that require surgery in the months of March and April are well above what they are towards the middle and end of the season. And the developments have been, hey, this is not a they're just started their season. They haven't even started their season in most cases. It's not an overuse issue. It's a, we were not prepared for the rigors of playing in competition issue. And so with respect to like injury prevention, the number one thing that I would say we've kind of maybe changed our tune on with respect to BRX over the last, you know, 10 years has been, let's actually start our throwing earlier in the year. We still might throw the same number of throws between the first day I throw and the season starting, but we're going to expand that time horizon from which that I'm throwing and preparing for the season to be a little bit longer of a time period. And that's going to be the best way to prevent injuries. Now, if we're already past that point, right? Season's already upon us. How do we prevent risk of injury? You know, this comes back into a multifaceted approach, watching pitch counts, making sure that when kids' arms are hurting, we're not throwing them out, you know, for an extra couple innings when they can't tolerate it. Maintaining our cuff strength in season. This is where kind of band work at the field a couple times a week can come in huge. So there's a lot of factors that influence it, but I would say the big one is just making sure that our throwing volume is being progressed at a slow and steady pace.
All right. Now we're going to dive into arm care. Okay. Because, and I don't want you to, you know, to get controversial, but it's whatever you feel comfortable here, but I think baseball's in that space right now on the throwing side where it's like, okay, do we want the 2 to 3 month shutdown? I mean, obviously we're not doing that right now. We're talking, you know, end of fall, you know, time, you know, we're talking October, November, December, whatever. We want the complete shutdown, or do you want to keep the fire lit a little bit and continue to play a little bit of catch year round and knowing that we're going to ramp up before the spring? Like, you know, in your work, in your world, like, where do you think, you know, where's the best? And I don't know, it probably isn't one size fits all. Nothing truly is. But in your experience with your athletes, where have you noticed, like, is the right sweet spot of year-round throwing versus, you know, that 9 on, 3 off?
Yeah, and like you said, this is highly individual-dependent, context-specific. But generally speaking, like I was kind of getting at, this is probably the one thing we have changed our tune on the most since we opened. It used to be, hey, don't touch a ball for 3 months, you know, give your arm a break. And, you know, I think this is where we kind of run into the issues of kids are picking up a ball February 1st, letting it rip. And all of a sudden their, you know, their arm is not prepared for that level of intensity and stuff breaks down. Now, at the same time, on the other end of the spectrum, what is just as big of an issue is kids who are throwing off the mound 12 months out of the year. So this is kind of where it comes down to that, you know, like finding yourself in the middle of the spectrum, so to speak. And maybe, I guess, let me say this. If we can control all the variables, this is our advice to a BRX athlete. If we can work with them 12 straight months, hey, after your season ends, you know, if you're playing, if you don't play fall ball, let's say it ends sometime in, you know, mid-August, late August, let's take maybe 2 to 4 weeks to let your arm just kind of take a breather. But then we're going to get your arm working a little bit, very low intensity, maybe 2 to 3 times a week, never more than a 5 out of 10. We're just going to keep your arm moving. And we're going to start our on-ramp phase a little bit earlier than we used to. Instead of maybe January 1st, maybe it's October 1st. We're not going to be throwing with the intent of increasing velocity in October, November, but it's starting earlier, starting slower, and building up slower.
That's super helpful. You know, and I think even just the language you use, like, let's be at a 5 out of 10. I mean, right, like an athlete can, there's no perfect science to that, but you know what a 5 out of 10 kind of is. Is it a 4.5? Is it a 5.5? No, it's about a 5, right? Like, but you also know what a 10 out of 10 is. And that's super helpful. And that's where I think you coming on here right now is the perfect time because, you know, your athletes all over the state of Wisconsin, you know, they're now being turned over to their spring season, whatever that may be. And I'm sure there's a part of you that is like, guys, be smart, take you know what you know, take care of yourselves, you know, best ability is availability. You got to stay healthy and progress. But you know, as sometimes as coaches, we get these kids and we wanna, you know, we wanna jumpstart them. We wanna throw them out there for that 100 right away. We wanna see everything they've worked on this off season. Like, give some advice for the coaches who are now getting their athletes for the first time in 2024.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think number one, and again, I'm highly aware of the fact that it's a lot more difficult when you are a, you know, you're a coach, finally able to be in contact with your athletes for the first time in how many months? You know, you got 30 kids staring at you at practice. You can't pull each one aside and create a custom individualized plan with them. But obviously, you know, you can still have those discussions off the cuff. And I think just getting an idea of what every athlete's, you know, previous month or two has looked like from a throwing volume standpoint can get things going in the right direction, if for no other reason than to just build that rapport, obviously, but also maybe identify some red flags, like some clear red flags. Hey, this athlete has not touched a ball until the first day of tryouts, right? I'm probably going to be treating him a little bit different than this athlete over here who's been doing a throwing program at BRX or GRB Sticks for the last 3 months, right? One thing we've started implementing in the last couple of years too is a daily arm health assessment, we call it, where athletes just simply rank their elbow and shoulder soreness on a scale from 1 to 10 after every day that they throw. And when we see an athlete tells us they have a 5 out of 10 or greater in any area of their arm, it doesn't mean we're saying, hey, stop throwing. It just means discussion takes place. And just giving, you know, I think sometimes even for us, like strength coaches and throwing coaches with our athletes, sometimes you just kind of, if an athlete's not saying anything, they must be good to go. But giving that communication avenue, that two-way street between coach and athlete and coach, just more information as a coach never hurts, right? And so that's we use our app for that, but I mean, you could just use something as simple as just a Google Sheet or an Excel file, right? Every day, I just quickly I have every kid just go in and type in what their elbow soreness is, shoulder soreness is, and if I see something that says 8 out of 10, I might game plan with that athlete out, that one athlete out of those 30 who requires follow-up.
And then you're doing that after after they warm up, like before the like what when's the right time to do that assessment? Because I think that's an
For
easy,
sure.
that's a free, cheap thing that we can all do.
Absolutely. We do it after they throw. So typically in our experience, if someone has, let's say someone says 2 out of 10 for shoulder, 2 out of 10 for elbow. Great. No issues at all. Almost never is that athlete going to show up the next day and say, oh my God, it's an 8 out of 10 all of a sudden. You know, they're pretty much that leading indicator, that first sign it's going to happen while they're throwing or immediately afterwards. And so by doing it after practice, think it's that way to not have to have your show up to practice, have your plan. One kid says 8 out of 10. Now I got to like game plan, but practice is starting, right? So doing it after practice, I feel like would be the most opportune time to implement that.
All right, perfect. So let's talk about like getting our guys ready to throw, right? I mean, sometimes us as old guys, as coaches, you know, I'm going to go throw BP. I take two throws into the net and I'm ready to go face some guys. Well, we're throwing old man BP down the middle or whatever we're doing. Kids need a warm up, however long, we determine it is. And we're so pressed for time. And, as coaches, sometimes we get impatient and it's let's go. We got to get warmed up. Give us optimal world, all things, no restrictions on time, no restrictions on supplies or space or whatever it may be. Give me that ideal pre-throwing routine, bands, stretches, whatever comes to mind.
Yeah. So I'm going to preface this by saying that, and I promise I'll loop this back to your question. But I've always believed that a business will grow in accordance with whether or not you are able to hire people that are more talented than you are. Right. And I think that's what we've done a really good job of at BRX. I, to be completely honest with you, Tim, I've never been a throwing coach. And so now, do I know enough to be dangerous? Absolutely. But this is where we talked earlier. I think you would be your listeners would really enjoy having some of our actual performance specialists on the podcast because they can dive into this in much greater detail than I. With that said, some huge big themes here. Number one, don't overdo it. So I think one of the most common mistakes that we see is athletes will run a marathon before a sprint when it comes to getting their arms ready. And what I mean by that is, you're going to throw once every 30 seconds if you're a pitcher, right? If you're just playing catch, getting your arm loose, it might be once every 15 seconds. That's like a short, quick burst of power and explosiveness, right? It does not make a whole lot of sense to do 15 sets of 10 reps of a bunch of different arm care drills before you go out and throw. It's really like having someone go run a mile and then show up to the 100-meter dash start line and say, go win that 100-meter dash, right? So that's number one. Keep it really simple. What we do is we'll do, anywhere from 3 to 4 exercises, some external rotations, some Ys, some Ts, one set of 10 reps per arm. It should take maybe 120 seconds, 2 minutes. Your only purpose, it's not to feel an enormous burn. It's just to activate the muscles around the rotator cuff. So that's kind of big theme number one, getting your arm ready to go. If you're going to do band work, keep it to a minimum. It should take less than 5 minutes, 100%, and it should never take longer. With respect to that, I thought, don't overdo it. Number two is don't overthink it. When it comes to the warm-up, the sole purpose is to just elevate the body temperature, right? So whether you're going to do a Spider-Man exercise or a bird dog or and obviously I know the listeners can't see the visuals here, but a lot of that stuff is way less important than just making sure that you're taking 5 to 10 minutes to get the body temperature up. And if you're doing that and kids are taking it seriously, you're going to be good.
Perfect. On the post-throwing phase, right? Like game's over, practice is over. We'll use that game setting, right? That starting pitcher, right? Everybody thinks of, 25 years ago, I was running poles after the game, and it was pole after pole after pole, because that's what Nolan Ryan did, right? And he, did what Nolan Ryan did. And that's how you build the legs. Well, over the years, there's been a lot of research, a lot of work done in, what does that post-game routine look like for throwers, especially that starting pitcher, or even the relief pitcher, guys who've put some strain on that, on their arm. Do you have a suggestion? Do you like some band work after? Do you like any sort of recovery drills? Do you like to see sprints, or just if their body's been through so much, just shut them down and get them some rest and recovery?
Yeah, that's a great question. And this is going to be very similar to my last answer. So any stress on any exercise is stress on the body. So, a trap bar deadlift and a band Y are both stress. They will both, it's like a bank account. They are both withdrawing from that bank account. The one arm Y, even though it's quote unquote a recovery exercise, is not going to deposit into that bank account. And so back to maybe common mistakes, doing too much in the post-throwing, post-game period. I think that, kids are in danger of overtraining based on getting 10 minutes of cuff work in after their game or practice? Absolutely not. But I think that, based on time we have, probably not going to make that big of a difference. I will say, though, that this goes back to my time at Cressy Performance. One of the big things that I learned when I was out there, because they trained, some of the best, most well-known pitchers in the world, right? Scherzer, Verlander, Corey Kluber. They just have a history of Cy Young winner after Cy Young winner. And one interesting thing that I did pick up out there was that when you're in your season, if you are, and this is a big if you're a pitcher who has a general idea of what days and games you'll be starting, there is no better time to get your most strenuous lift in of the week than immediately after the game. And the reason for that is because you'll never have more time off before your next game than right after a game, right? Now, this, for obvious reasons, doesn't always work out perfectly, but if I'm giving advice to some of my starters, my high school baseball coach, and I think, hey, he's starting on Thursday, he probably won't pitch again until next Tuesday, I'll say, hey, you know, Billy, either get your heavy lift in after practice today or after our game or tomorrow at the latest. That way you'll have as much time as possible to recover before your next outing, your next start. And this will allow you to maintain your strength and power throughout your season so you don't fade towards the end of it. So anyway, I thought that might be something interesting for the listeners to kind of chew on.
Well, it is because, you know, we as coaches, right, and players and parents, it's the game's over. It's okay. It's freezing cold, right? Like it's the spring in Wisconsin. The bus is running. Your girlfriend wants to see you. You got to carry, you know, rake the field. You got to do all these things. And you think, ah, I'm not going to do my recovery today. You know, it's so be it. I'll be fine kind of mentality. And it just, you know, the process, you know, the kind of the stick to the process mentality of like, this is just what it is. Even if you're upset about how you pitched, like your arm still went through a lot of stress. So that's super helpful. The last thing I want to ask you in this regards is like, when you think about warmups and cool downs and throwing programs and strength conditioning, like, you know, things that we as high school coaches are programming into our day-to-day, you know, time spent with our kids. Like, what else are we missing? Like, is there something out there that you think's like an area that we could really attack that may be underutilized?
It's a great question. I think we've touched on a few of these elements, you know, throughout. You know, honestly, I think one of the themes here is sometimes less is more, right? So I think that, you know, as serious strength coaches, as serious throwing coaches, as serious high school baseball coaches, you always want to be doing more for your athletes. And sometimes in the middle of the season, less is more. Sometimes when a kid is crushed after a game, you know, maybe it is just hit the buses and let's just kind of pick ourselves up the next day and take it one day at a time. One thing I will say that I think is important, going back to our post-throwing discussion, one of our first big success stories was a guy named Joel Efforts, who was someone I played baseball with at lacrosse. And, you know, when you're a young, hungry S&C professional and you hear that, hey, you know, don't do pulls, do sprints instead. And it's really easy to get tunnel vision. And I'll never forget, Joel told me that, you know, one time, you know, I used to be a big pull guy. I used to run 8 pulls after every start, and I just feel like I was at my best when I would run pulls. Even though all the research I would tell him shows that, hey, you're going to lose strength and power and speed if you, you know, beat yourself up with steady state conditioning after your starts. He was like, you know what? From a mentality standpoint, I just feel confident when I run pulls 3 to 4 times a week. And I really sat with that for a while. And I was like, you know what? I mean, we always say it, like baseball is 90% of the game is half mental, right? And I do think there is an element of what works for one person and what the research might show might not be the best for every athlete, because there is a massive psychological component. And it comes back to the idea of, you know, your body better than everyone. When you're a coach, you know your team better than any other coach or strength coach. And sometimes that counts for something. So just figured I would try not to be too, you know, black and white about it, because there is a lot of nuance and individual preferences with it.
Oh, that's super helpful. And, you know, it got me thinking about another question. You know, we've spent a lot of time on the high school athlete. You know, that's the majority of the audience here. And you've been extremely humble about the type of athletes that have been in your facility. And yes, you have the 130-pound soaking wet 15-year-old who doesn't know a ton, but you're also getting some high-end kids, college kids, pro guys, guys with big league, major league service. Like, so my question for you is this. What are you noticing about the highest level athletes that you train? Like, what are they coming in with? It is like, you know, holy cow, like they are doing something at an elite level that maybe just like passes its way down to younger guys. Because one of the things talking with you over the years, sometimes it's just like the culture of high level athletes rubs off on other guys and they just assimilate to it. So what are those characteristics and attributes that those big league guys, those power five arms are coming in with that are just like reverberating throughout the building?
Yeah, I think about this a lot. And you do this long enough, you start seeing, you know, talented athletes come through the doors. You see some, you know, achieve incredible things. You see some kind of peter out, and it becomes really clear that the limiting factor for long-term development and whether or not an athlete reaches their potential is more on the psychological, mental side than it is the physical side. Now, obviously, you know, some kids are never going to throw 90 miles an hour. Some guys can do whatever they want and throw 95 and not even touch a weight. You're always going to have those outliers. But I think the biggest thing that I have realized, you know, in 10 years of being in this field, seeing hundreds of professional baseball players at Cressy Performance, seeing, you know, many athletes at BRX Performance from, you know, little leaguers to big leaguers. So we've had a few, like you alluded to. It's just the way they carry themselves. You know, they're not skipping their warmups. They're not skipping their, you know, post throwing routine, like you mentioned. They just treat everything with an incredible level of detail. And how they do everything is how they do, or how they do anything is how they do everything. And they're very coachable. But at the same time, they understand when to be their own biggest advocate, right? You want to be coachable, but you don't want to be changing things every 2 weeks. And so I think those are the big two themes are just incredible attention to detail, being your own biggest advocate while being coachable and navigating that spectrum, navigating that you know, conundrum, so to speak.
Man, that would have been a heck of a way to like rail off right off into the sunset here, but I got to ask you a couple more questions. There's just more.
Hey, I keep
looking at the time like, he's got a few more minutes. Anyways, so like you're constantly evolving, obviously, you know, on the business side, on the athlete side. Like, is there anything you've been working on recently? Like, what's intriguing you right now? Is there something you've learned recently that's maybe challenged the way you think? Has someone come in with a different program from a different organization and you thought, oh, that caught my attention? Like, when I ask that question, what comes to mind?
Yeah. And I think this goes back to the psychological side versus the physical side. When you're a strength coach, it's so easy to look at the new shiny drill that you see on Instagram that you haven't seen before and say, this is the one. But then you realize that, hey, like this is an important part of the development process, individualized strength and throwing. It is critically important, don't get me wrong. But when you start, like, for example, I'll always ask my staff, hey, what was it? Here's one, these two athletes had like similar ability levels. Like, why did this one get to the next level? Why did this one fizzle out? The answer is never, oh, well, the first one had a better program. He had better drills on his sheet. It was always, well, this second athlete would train for 3 months and then take his foot off the gas for their nine. Oh, this one would eat breakfast. This one wouldn't. You know, this one would actually wear his pulse sleeve so I could monitor his throwing volume. This one didn't, right? And so you start to see themes, and, you know, it's difficult to admit at times because you're like, well, I would just be so great if it was all based on my knowledge and the drills I put on an athlete's sheet. But really, you realize that it's as much a behavioral equation as it is a physical one. And so, while, you know, obviously when you're, you know, trying to improve yourself and innovate, you're always going to be tweaking your programs, adding new things. But I think the biggest thing we've been really shining a spotlight on over the last, you know, couple of years at BRX is how do we get more athletes to maximize their potential? And the answer always leads us to something other than the actual drills or programming on their program. It's something other than that. And so I don't know if that makes sense, but, you know, it's really approaching development from a holistic perspective, not just tunnel vision, S&C, nutrition, recovery, sleep, just mental fortitude. When you have a bad outing or your velocity goes down for a month, do you quit at that point or do you persist? It's helping athletes overcome all of those barriers, of which there are many.
All right, so I got to end here. This is where I cut off the mic. You roll us into the outro. Like, again, mostly high school coaches, the high school athletes coming to us right now, like, and talk to us. Give us some, act like we know nothing, like that, like you've done such a great job so far and you've touched on a lot of this, but give us some advice for this upcoming season. A lot of coaching will listen to this and think, man, this is great, but man, you know, that's all something in a different world. Like, give us some like good, hard direction and say, stick to this program, do this, be consistent. Maybe I'm stealing from your advice, but like, give us some parting words about high school coaches working with high school athletes, especially with our throwers.
Yeah. So I'll try to keep it really tactical as much as possible, because I think that's kind of what you're getting at, right? So back to some things we've talked about and some that I haven't. Number one, 30 minutes, 2 to 3 times a week. Perfect world after practice, team weightlifting session. Next tier, before practice, we don't have access to the weight room. Just give athletes something, highly encourage them to do it 2 to 3 times a week outside of their practices and games. Number two, with respect to constructing the actual weightlifting program, reach out to us. We'd be happy to provide some information for free. But if you're going to go about it on your own, try your best to reduce heavy gripping exercises. So for example, I might choose a look up the exercise cross face grip split squat as opposed to a trap bar deadlift. Because in the first case, the bar is resting on the front of my shoulders, and I'm not actually gripping it with my hands, right? Whereas a heavy deadlift, heavy gripping component, right? You want to be limiting heavy gripping during your season because of how much stress the arm is actually already going under, right? So that'd be one of them, reduce heavy gripping exercises. Switch out sets of weightlifting exercises. Instead of 3 sets of 8, we're maybe doing 100 pounds for 8 reps. You'll actually counterintuitively be better off doing fewer reps. So maybe instead of 3x8, maybe 3x2 or 4x2, and keeping the weight high. So you'll, as long as you're getting in some high intense strength training, that strength research shows will stay for about 30 days. So if you do it once every 4 weeks, a heavy like lift, you'll be good. But again, make sure that volume, the reps, instead of 8 or 10, go down to 2, 3, 4, or 5. Because that'll allow athletes to not get fatigued, but still maintain their strength. There's something called the eccentric phase of an exercise. So when you think of a squat, think of the way down. Exercises that involve the athlete having to undergo stress on the way down, like a back squat, will be something you want to stay away from. Also, if you can do it, try to accomplish 2 things at once with respect to exercises. So if you can think about a side bridge or a side plank, and you have access to a cable pulley, we use an exercise called a side bridge cable row. So you're doing a side bridge and you're using your pulling to complete a row, right? So that allows you to train both the core and the upper body simultaneously. So the theme is pick exercises that accomplish more than one thing at one time. So that'd be kind of the 4 tactical things with respect to strength training: high intensity, low volume, reduce gripping, reduce eccentrics, or things where you go down and have to kind of strain like a back squat, and try to create drills or utilize drills that accomplish more than one thing at the same time.
All right, man, that's it. Thank you. Hey, congratulations on all the success you and Josh and your whole staff have had. You guys have done just such an incredible job with all the athletes you work in our area and remotely. And just thanks again for hopping on here, and I appreciate everything.
Yeah, likewise. Had a great time, and wishing nothing but the best this upcoming season.
And there it is. Huge thank you goes out to Brooks for taking time out of his busy schedule to sit down with us today. You know, I've been waiting for a good time to release this episode and, you know, to lock Brooks down for an hour and to talk about a topic that I'm really passionate about. And also I'm really, you know, under-trained on, right? That's not my skill set. You know, I'm a high school teacher and a baseball coach, and whatever training I've had along the way, strength conditioning piece in the baseball space is, you know, been some of it, but I feel much more comfortable in other places. So throughout the years, as I've gotten to know Brooks and Josh and their team, and, you know, kind of watch them start up this business, and, you know, all these years later, the success that they've had, it's been really fun for me to grow as a coach and to reach out to these leaders in their industry, because that's what they are. You know, again, I like to think that I know what I know and I could run a strength program, but man, if information's available, again, I say this all the time to people that ask me about coaching, there's no better time to coach than right now if you are looking for information. Like, if you want to find, you know, hitch your wagons to BRX Performance, like, there's resources out there for coaches. If this is something you want to make a priority in your program, here's a resource. And this might just be a starter for you. For some people, it might end here. This might just be something that, a seed that's planted that just grows and completely changes your program. I don't know. I mean, everybody has different limitations, different resources, and different priorities. So that's why I love this episode. I think this is one you'll come back to throughout the season, throughout the months, maybe throughout the years, because every time I talk to Brooks and his team, I just feel like I'm learning more and more about how to handle and best make our keep our athletes healthy and get them stronger and stronger so they're performing at their best the most often. So anyways, that's it. That's it for the episodes. That's how we're going to cap off the off season looking into 2024. Thank you for tuning in. Good luck this season. I'm rooting for you. I mean, again, unless we play you, right? I want to beat you, but I love you. And I'm happy for the guys that have the successful seasons that they want. Hopefully you guys enjoy it. It's a beautiful thing we get a chance to do. Again, it's hard. It's long. I think that's something that we all love about it is the grind. But as you're dealing with all the struggles of your season, remember the good stuff. I'm trying to stay present this year and enjoy the journey. Hopefully you are off and running right now with your programs and enjoying the time with the kids. So until next off season, when we start this back up again, have a great 2024 season. And if we bump into each other, please say hi. I'd love to talk to you. And I'm sure I'm going to ask you some questions and try to steal something from our program. So anyways, good luck once again. And thank you for tuning in to these episodes. Have a great rest of your day.